Sandra Lundström. Tell me, you had some ideas for explorations.
Yes, the story of sex.
Where would you like to start?
I don't know, actually. I have no idea.
Because
from the beginning.
Yeah, well, that often is not where people learn about it in school.
No.
They often already learned about sex while they were being born, in fact, while they were being conceived. But a lot of people in many cultures, by the way, don't seem to know too much about it. I looked into sex a long time ago because I realized that in the culture where I grew up, the Western world, sex is as if a hidden factor. I at some point realized that it is as if the bedroom door or the sex room door is a magic door, that things happen there which do not happen in the rest of reality. And outside of that door, people deny that it happens, or they pretend that it doesn't happen. And there's a lot of Victorian thinking about sex still. And so at some point I started to look into why is that, and realized that that had a lot to do with the philosophy of the church in Rome, which was the follow-up of the government in Rome. And of course, Rome was a culture which went out to rob the land of the people and have people pay taxes on it. And so it's not surprising that a lot of the sexual politics, as they were created by the church, had to do with the properties of ownership, or the ownership of properties. So that's one part of the story, the politics of sex, or rather the politics of the repression and suppression of sex, which still weighs so heavily on our culture in the Western world, that as a kind of anti-reaction to that, there is this elaborate sex training manual on the internet called pornography, which in a way is the normal reaction after suppression. People suddenly discover that whatever was forbidden is now available, so they overuse it before they start to learn to use it. So the sexual politics is one part of the story. The learning how to use it is another part of the story. And that is much the human story of growing up as a baby, basically not being concerned with sex at all. Then as a child, discovering that, yes, there are differences between boys and girls and men and women, but do they matter? And then at some point the hormone rush kicks in, and then sexuality does seem to matter, for some all too much apparently. And then the strange conclusion which I came to, that as a result of a failed development in puberty, a lot of people in adulthood have a lack of an understanding of sexuality, specifically a lack of understanding of the consciousness development due to sexuality. So the first topic element would then be the church and sexual repression. The second part would be how in biology we actually see that sex is never a problem but a solution. A third part would be that in humanity we should be seeing that sex is a solution instead of a problem. And then the fourth part of the story would be why sex is a solution, and specifically that's the work of Wilhelm Reich and the Taoists, that sex actually is very much related to a development of the bioelectrical field in the body, which is also the electrical field of our psychology and consciousness, and that in that sense sexuality is the main training device to learn about transcendental consciousness, and that your life is not about being a woman or being a man, but that a woman and a man are both in their way half a human, and only together can they continue humanity. So would that be a line of thought, or maybe you could say a bit more about your experiences and views on sexuality, because what I just described is much more a descriptive part of how I started to look at sexuality, also after my medical school training, in which I realized, just as did Wilhelm Reich and many others, that sexuality is actually not being dealt with in medical school. They look into birthing, just as the church did, and they look into conception a bit more than the church did, and they look into sexual diseases, sexually transmitted diseases, just as the wise women of the Middle Ages did, which then were exterminated by the church. But in medical school, there is not much understanding about the sexual relationship between people and the effect of problems with relationship on the effect of disturbed sexual relationship between people. And that's where the work of Wilhelm Reich and others became so very much important. But those are still descriptive aspects of sexuality. So perhaps it would be useful if you add your perspective on sexuality, that we can sort of weave a way through that and see where we would like to start with that.
Well, I mean, what I know from school wasn't very much. You basically looked at a video of how a baby is made, and yeah, that was pretty much it. what my parents and family have told me when I grew up and things like this, but you know, it's not much. It's very, I mean, even in Sweden we are quite open and we do talk about sex quite a lot, but it's still not in a way that anyone understands. Nobody really knows what it is and how to properly enjoy. I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but yeah, we don't really learn it anymore. So, but I think everything that you said would be very interesting to hear about the church and politics and all of this, why it is this way now, and why it's looked upon as something not nice many times.
Yes, okay. In that case, I would suggest that I would follow that line of thought which I pursued a couple of years ago, and basically start with the denial of sex by the churches, then the biological sex is a solution approach, and then a third, the sexual development in puberty, and basically what goes wrong in Western world, because in puberty people sit in school benches instead of being out in the fields and the forests. Mm-hmm. And the fourth, which is the connection to, let's call it, sex and magic, and magic being the ability to have your ideas come into action. And actually magic is about the capacity to create new ideas, to feel them out within you, to test them out in your body, and then put them into action in the world. So magic is really the realizing an idea, that first you have an idea and then it becomes a reality. The thing that people forget when they use the word magic is that you actually need to do it yourself. You need to get the body involved. The involvement of the body is crucial, and sexuality is actually a very strong way to learn about how the body works, because in sexuality we are interfacing between this electromagnetic information field in our body, which we call consciousness, and the electrodynamic action field of the body, which we call living and doing things. So in that sense, could I ask you if you agree that I now do a brief introduction which sort of outlines why I started to look at that way, and briefly introducing all of these four topics, and then conclude that, and then in four separate sessions address these different aspects of first, the denial of sex by the churches, second, this biology of sex, in which we evidently see that sex is a solution, third, what is the normal development of sexual awareness and sexual activity in the human, and also what can go wrong there, and as a fourth topic, the Taoist and Tantric understanding that sex is actually the key to understanding how we relate to each other and together form humanity, but also how within us we have this very delicate and subtle but very pervasive and powerful level of mind, where we are not just feeling what happens within us but also feel what happens in somebody else, and that at that level we learn to transcend our own limitations, but also learn to operate what we can best call telepathy or empathy. First empathy, then telepathy. That all because we are there dealing with the electromagnetic fields in the body. At that level, we actually have to understand ourselves as a kind of mobile telephone, a smartphone, but more sophisticated than that. And that's where we can then see how sex and consciousness connect. Is that a good solution?
Yes, wonderful.
Let me then start with these four elements of the topic, which basically is the track that I followed when I first started to look into that. Because from my body I knew that sexuality was built in. I also knew that there was a kind of delay factor on it, kind of a time bomb effect. That even though I was born as a guy, little guy, the sexual activity didn't start up until, say, 14 years later. Apparently that was the case for everybody in my school class. Girls started to have more breast formation, and the boys started to have the breaking of the voice. So there was evidently something that not just happened in me but in everybody, and that to me made it all the more surprising that was not something that was addressed in school, not elsewhere, not at the home. So I was curious, why is it that people get so iffy when sex is being addressed? Why is it that there are so many regulations about sexuality, basically denying it? And so in the Western culture, most of these regulations on the denial of sexuality are always referred back to the biblical story of the Garden of Eden. That is very curious, because if you look back at the history, the BBC at some point did a documentary about the story of the Garden of Eden, and essentially said, yes, there was a king called Adam, and yes, he did live in Jerusalem, and by the way, he didn't want to pay taxes to the king of Babylon, so at some point the king of Babylon came in, brought some pals, busload of hooligans, they knocked down the city walls, they knocked down the temple garden, and they knocked down the temple, and basically told King Adam of Jerusalem that not paying taxes was not a good idea, and that he was dethroned. And according to that researcher, I forgot her name, You can find it on the BBC repositories. That was then put as the beginning of the Bible, while actually it was a story which took place much, much later in the history of mankind. So, with that idea that the story of the Garden of Eden was actually an epic story about tax evasion and how people tend to deal with that, then when you read the story in the Bible as it is presented, as if it is the starting of the universe and as it is the beginning of the book of the Bible, or the books of the Bible, then it would seem that the Garden of Eden is the natural place of life on Earth, and that people somehow lost the capacity to live in the harmony with nature. Well, there are some other documentaries, and again, the BBC has excellent work on that. And those are the documentaries about the exodus of humanity out of Africa. And then it turns out that there was a period of time where the weather was more temperate, and that the center of Africa was not separated from the northern part of Africa by these immense deserts, but that there was actually a vegetation as a result of which people could go from the middle of Africa up north and across to Saudi Arabia, and then the area at the edge of Saudi Arabia Peninsula is actually called Eden. And opposite you have Aden or Aden as a reminder of that. So there is the speculation that that would be the part where this story sort of originated, that people having come out of Africa and having started this new culture in the Golden Crescent area actually had these memories of living there in nature for a long time, and from there on they actually would have disseminated into Australia, Asia and other places in Europe, and also from Asia to the Americas. So that from that perspective of it, of the history of humanity, Eden or had that part of the Saudi Peninsula would be the starting point of the culture that is later described by its history in the books of the Bible. The story of the paradise situation in the Bible, as it is described there, we thus need to understand in a much larger perspective, and as is the case with many of the books of the Bible, you need to understand which people wrote it for which purpose and what was the sequence of events that preceded it, and how did people actually at that time understand it. Their technology was much more limited. They couldn't interact with each other as extensively as we can do now. So in that sense, at that time, their experience of their reality was much more limited than what we have now. So how could they make sense of it? And apparently that led to the story of people living in paradise, something happening, and then being thrown out of it. And crucial in that whole story is then that apparently they were being thrown out of paradise for starting to wear fig leaves to hide their sexual nature. Now, whatever the story is around that, because the whole story of the snake and the Garden of Eden needs to be interpreted in the context of the Egyptian understanding of the snake, which was the symbol for electricity. And there was a group of priests which had to do with the snake. We would call them the electrical engineers now. So when you read about the snake or the adversary, which is, the adversary is also the other part of our thinking, if we can think something, we can also think the opposite, and if we can think a thing and the opposite, then basically both ideas are not true. Because if you have two sides of a coin, then you must understand what's the real value that you're addressing. And so the representation of the snake as the adversary, as the other way of thinking, has gotten a bit confused and muddled. But essentially it only said that at the moment that people started to disguise their sexuality, that is when they were thrown out of paradise. If you turn that the other way around, you would say that if you want to go back to paradise, throw away your clothes and see what comes next. That is essentially what these four stories will be about then. That first we need to understand why the Catholic Church built up on that idea of the denial of sexuality as they portrayed it in that book of Genesis, in their collection of books of the Bible. And do remember that the Bible is a collection of selected books. Other books were not put into that bundle. And as a South African secret agent of the government said, I know when people have been editing and manipulating text, and the Bible is full of it. So then you can see that there is actually a political purpose behind the Bible and all of the books that are contained in it. And then sexuality is probably very much part of a political agenda. So in the first part of the story, we'll then need to look at what is this institution church, where does it come from, and how come that it was the follow-up of the Roman Empire. Did the Roman Empire actually decay, and did the church come up out of nothing, or were the people behind the Roman Empire actually also the people behind the Roman Church? And Jordan Maxwell, his name is Palmer, I believe, described that there are six Roman families who initiated the Catholic Church. So basically it was a banking business set up by six banking families. So that'll be part of the first story then, how that happened and what the consequences were thereof, with the Inquisition and other, let's say, psychological terrorism techniques, which left a trauma on the whole Western world culture, and which we still see nowadays in the strange development of sexuality, where since the 1960s and the creation of the birth control pill, which was actually created by a woman to help regulate the menstrual cycle, which was a different purpose altogether, but which was then used to regulate the fertility cycle of the female, basically making it possible for the male to say, well, I don't care that you're fertile now, I want to have sex, which goes back to the Roman philosophy. So the first part of the story, as sex as a problem, is very much about the Roman inheritance of soldiers going out to rape and pillage the rest of Europe, and the church institutionalizing that as a kind of behavior which was imposed on all people. But the memory of all of that was not lost when the sexual revolution was set up in the 1960s, and we can still see that it has not been resolved because of the immense amount of internet pornography, which you could also look at as a cry for help of what is sex about. And although they now depict how sexuality is being done as a kind of description of sex, they are not able to go into the purpose of why sex is done, which is the experience of sex. And that is why I needed to look beyond the history of sex and the denial of sex in the church system in Europe. the second part of the story for my research at that time was then, okay, taking into account that there is this immense denial of sexuality as a result of this church political thing, which is basically an ownership thing, then let's see what sex is in nature. And then there are so many different solutions of sex to be found, starting with the asexual reproduction of single cellular and even smaller organisms, so that you can see that it is possible for organisms to clone themselves and as a result keep on living over billions of years, so that we can still find them now. And we can actually see that all those microbial and microscopic life forms are the basis of all the life forms that we see. And so in the second part of the story, it is then mainly about the, let's say, the mathematical difference of asexual and sexual reproduction. And it is fascinating to see that in the transition between asexual and sexual production, there is a phase in which microbes were able to give information from one microbe to the other. So actually it is like an estafette stick. There's a protein which gives from the one microbe to the other the information that the other microbe cannot have had. And it is in this way that hospital microbes, which have survived the regimens of antibiotics and learned to live with that, can pass on that knowledge of how to survive harsh circumstances to other microbes. So in a way you could call that contagious life. And evidently we can see that in the universe, on Earth specifically, where we can see it, there are all kinds of developments of life, and life always develops within a specific environment, and life always adapts into an environment. It is in part, as Darwin tries to suggest, that there's an adaptation as a result of which different life forms can change so that they can grow with the change of conditions. But it is also, as Lamarck said, that there are requirements for quite crucial internal reconfigurations as a result of which a life form can actually develop into something which is beyond what it was before. And Lynn Margulis also describes that the development of life, and I would like to extend that to the development of consciousness, actually needs both components. It needs one part of, say, the Darwinian cloning procedure, that you develop a species in an environment and then it will be compatible with the environment. But there is also this Lamarckian changing of the characteristics, not by weeding out of the species that did not survive, but specifically by the species incorporating new knowledge, new insight, as a result of which it can actually transcend limitations that it has. And then in this interaction between microbes, we can see how one microbe which already has learned to survive a specific harsh environment, such as the hospital antibiotics, can meet up with a microbe which does not yet have that information, and then out pops the protein which has that specific information of how to deal with that antibiotic. And always remember that antibiotics are actually microbial shit of the kind that the microbes themselves would not be able to work with. But in the concatenation, the continuity of life, one life form will most often be able to live off the shit of another. So that's where you have this expression of one cell's poison is another cell's food. So in the interaction of microbes, we can see that the cells actually feed each other with the information that they needed to survive in an environment. And then we can understand that sexuality is actually that kind of added information. And in humanity, you can see that life is carried by only the female. And the male is actually a carrier of these variations to the theme. So the female has a circular DNA and one strand of linear DNA. The male adds one strand of linear DNA, so then together the new result out of the sexual fusion will have the circular DNA plus two strands of linear DNA. So in that sense, the male contributes one quarter of the story and the female contributes three quarters of the story. And if you look at the X and Y chromosome, then in the X chromosome, you can see that the female actually has one quarter of the chromosome more than the male. So there is a definite difference between the male and the female. And if you look at the chromosomal level and at the DNA level, then you can see that the female definitely has more of the information and it has more complete information. And that, of course, puts to question this whole notion that a couple of guys in Rome would tell the whole of humanity, and specifically all of the women, what to do. And because even though they might have an interesting idea about their own lives, they do not experience what it is to give birth, and they do not have the capacity to give birth. So in that sense, it would be more logical from the perspective of biology that in humanity, the female would care for, let's say, the giving of law. And that is something which we can see in the Indian tribes in North America. Some of them formulated as testosterone is a quite dangerous molecule, so we cannot combine that with politics. So in those tribes, the women will need to come up to the decision of what will happen. And evidently, they will want to avoid that they send their boys into wars, and also they will take into account that whatever they decide will need to be valid for seven generations to come. It also must work well for nature and all of the animals. And so in those tribes, they have a much more connected to earth kind of law giving and way of life. So we can get those ideas out of the biological levels of sexuality. And it's quite funny that if you look into the biology of sex in general, extending beyond the humans, then you can see that there are so many variations to the theme of sexuality, with so many alternatives in life on Earth, that for example, it's the male seahorse which will actually care for the offspring, and there are the slugs which are hermaphrodite, so they can transit between male and female. And there are all kinds of variations which would need to be understood to fully appreciate the richness and the fullness of sex and sexuality as a means for biology to actually solve problems in life. And the more variations there are to sexuality, the more solutions there are to the survival in harsh circumstances. So that is an, let's say, a preview on the story of the biology of sex. Then the third part of the story is essentially not the description but the experience of sexual development. Astrology helps to understand that there is this cycle of 7 years in which you could say, for 7 years we are a baby, then for 7 years we are a child, for 7 years we are an adolescent, and for 7 years we learn to become an adult. The first 7 years are essentially about learning how to use your body and learn to work with the reflexes in the body, but also learn to create reflexes in the body so that you can use your body in very many different ways. The second 7 years are about using mind, development of ideas, the cultivation, conditioning of beliefs, the dismantling of beliefs, and so on. The third 7 years are about the discovery of boundaries, but also about the realization that we need to take decisions. More relevantly, that we all have our limitations. We can see that explicitly in being either male or female, and that by combining the complements, the opposites, we can actually see how these limitations fall away. While the male and the female by themselves have sex cells which live for 3 days, once you combine them as a kind of two-component glue, they will live for 120 years, which, by the way, was apparently a research that they did on a cell growing in a vial in a laboratory until somebody turned off the electricity and they couldn't test it any longer. So there is something that happens in puberty when people learn that they do have their limitations, the same as science at some point learned that there is the event horizon at the speed of light beyond we know nothing. And in puberty we learn that we can actually take the quantum leap and see that on the other side of that boundary of ignorance, there is somebody else who has the rest of the story. It's like putting two pieces of a puzzle together, and then male and female suddenly become human, and as human together they can continue humanity. So in puberty there is something very powerful that develops, because people should normally learn to connect up to their complement, so that by their complementarity they can complete each other, which of course they can only do if they work with synergy and if they support each other. And that means we need to really get away from this notion that there is a kind of implied battle between the sexes. There is not. Humanity can only live on if humans realize that together they form humanity. And it's quite interesting also that sex does not prolong your life, but it prolongs the life of humanity. Well, actually, the fourth part of the story will show that sex can prolong your life and can improve your health. So we'll come around to that in the fourth part. Let me just add a bit more on the story of puberty, because at the moment it seems as if the whole of humanity in the Western world got stuck in puberty. A lot of what happens in society is about puberescent events. So when they talk about adult movies, actually they're talking about puberty video educational material on how the sexual copulation act operates. And it is surprising that they have so much of it, because once people would start to do it, they would actually learn from it. And in my view, sport is never a spectator sport, it's always an activity sport. And sex likewise. If you are free to experience and explore sexuality and sexual interaction, you will learn what can be done. And there is a story of the longhouse on the Truk Islands, where all of the people entering puberty would go into the house, they would live there together, they would have sex with each other, and they would discover that with some people there is a kind of compatibility, which does not exist with others. But you can only discover that by being able to have sex free of restraints and conditions imposed by others. You need to actually learn it from the body, and in the body you need to learn how it connects to the mind, the soul and the spirit. So that's where I then realized I had I had to go into the deeper level sexuality, which is where we actually go beyond that level of puberty and see in the fourth part of the story how sexuality and consciousness are linked. So the fourth part of the story is essentially based on the work of Wilhelm Reich. And it is notable that actually the American government, who does a lot of evil deeds as a government, has caused Wilhelm Reich to die in prison because of their Puritan notions. They thought that he should not be able to talk freely about sex and the development of sex, because one of the things that Wilhelm Reich discovered is what he called the orgastic or orgasmic potential. And the story of Wilhelm Reich actually starts with him being in medical school and realizing that he was not learning about sex. He was rather being told about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees, how pollination of flowers takes place, but not how and why sexuality was developed in nature and how and why sexuality is built into our body. So evidently, if you want to understand sexuality, you need to understand it from the single cellular organism and then into the plant life, into the animal life and into the human life, and then you discover that there is something going on, which is that once people start to actually know about sex, and when they start to do sex, have sexual intercourse, and when they start to discover sex, to realize that sex is like a conversation. It's not about mumbling words, but it is about becoming eloquent and articulating very well. So sex in that sense is a language, which is a very rich language, which has, yes, a grammar, and yes, it has a syntax. It is semantic, it's semiotic, just like any language. You can say things with it, and you can indicate things with it beyond what you can say. But more importantly, sex can be very prosaic, like the reproduction sex that the let's say Calvinistic brands of Christianity advocate as the only kind of sex that people should have, the necessity sex or the necessarily reproductive sex. But the other part of sex, which is the poetry of sex, has to do with what happens in the sexual interaction. It is not that you have a kind of blind and ignorant orgasm of the male in the briefest possible period of time, which is what Coelho described in his story about 11 minutes, that for most people sex is a very reductionistic, simplistic ritual, which is no more than a grunt and, as the Americans say, slam bam, thank you man, as they come they go. Sex is not just a statement, but it is a language, and as the Sufis and the Moors have always presented, it is a poetry. And the more you get into that understanding of the poetry, then you discover that there are different levels of body functioning that come into play. So Wilhelm Reich describes that, and I explored that and realized that the experience of sex is very similar to our way of sensing anything, It starts with the sensory cell, then it goes to a neuron, then it goes to a neural plexus, then it goes into the brain. Same for sex. But sex is also a digestion of information, so it is very much similar to what we have in our digestive system. First we chew something physically, then it goes to the stomach chemically, then it goes into the duodenum, the enzyme rip the food apart electromagnetically, and then the cells actually decide what they take in, what they do not take in. It's a consciousness filtering. So in sex we see the same, that sex starts with a physical activity, a physical contact. And once you understand that we are all in a way like electric eels, electricity plays an impressive and immense subtle role in everything we do. We call it our sensation or our psychology. Then of course in the physical contact we already wake up to that electromagnetic sensing, and then we at the next level of the contact, of sexual contact interaction, is let's call it the physiology of the sexual interaction. We go from the anatomy of touch and bodies connecting and doing things to the physiology of it, that there is a rhythm which starts to be shared, there is a dance which takes place, there is the exploration of silence passages in the music, louder passages in the music, but specifically the art of composing music that is not just one note, another tone, note and explosive finale, but that there's actually a slow building up, it's a crescendo, decrescendo. Everything that you can find in music comes into play in this physiology of sexual experience, sexual interaction. And in fact, the more the male follows the female in the rhythms, the more the female can follow the male in the rhythms, and together they can go from a lower or slower kind of physiology to a more excited kind of physiology, where the physiology, which is mainly chemical, with let's say the hormonal level, extends into the neuronal level. The change in hormones affects a change in the neurons. And if the male follows the female, then in the male, the change in the neurons will actually trigger a change in the hormones, which means that for the female, the hormonal activity, which is preponderant in the female, is excited by a neuronal cloud of consciousness, or a charge discharge, a lightning effect, which starts to interplay with the sounds, as if the sound in her body of the sexual interaction is complemented by a light show. There are kind of flashes of higher frequencies coming in, while for the male, where the sexual activity is predominantly neuronal and visual, by the sustained interaction and the slowing down, it is like as if the light show is complemented with the sound show, so that the male starts to feel more of the hormonal levels, because the neurons trigger a hormonal change, as a result of which the body of the male starts to change. But what is more important is that for the female and the male, in the transition from, say, the physiology to the psychology of the sexual interplay, the chemistry is moved towards the electricity, the electromagnetic information flow in the body. So it is no longer chemical, which can be very slow, but it's now also electromagnetic, which can be very fast, but also it is no longer local. The electrical fields are local, but the magnetic fields are not. And as a result of this increase of the magnetic field, a coupling arises between the male and the female, as a result of which the magnetic fields start to couple the male and the female, which means that it is possible for their electrical fields to synchronize and synergize, which they individually feel because the neuronal system starts to cross-connect, and Taoism describes that. And then it is as if the physiology is no longer separate but combined. And that's where you then have a very strange effect, which generally is called nature abhors a vacuum, because if the body of the female and the body of the male both become enveloped by this electromagnetic, biochemical, biopsychological music of the orgasm building up, then the two bodies are as if one. It is like as if two loudspeakers suddenly start to play the same music. And understand that in a kind of double sense. Normally the male and the female would be one loudspeaker and the other, but they will be playing their own music. Now they start to merge and play their own music. But as a result of going stereophonic, the orchestra between them, which otherwise you would not see in a mono loudspeaker system, suddenly becomes tangible, visible. So between the male and the female, suddenly this magnetic field starts to unfold, and the orchestra, let's say the universe around them, everything unknown, can come into play. But this can only take place if the neurophysiology part of the orgasm is sustained long enough for the electrical field to build up into a magnetic field, and for the magnetic field to overshadow the neuronal and the hormonal activities in our bodies. By the way, the way that this electrical field builds up has been described for the individual in the book Stalking the Wild Pendulum by Itzhak Benthoff. He was a neurophysiologist, so he was very much into how this electrical field interacts with the biological, physiological field in the body. But Wilhelm Reich showed that if you have this triggering of the Kundalini, the shift from the physiology to the neurocrinology to the electromagnetic field into the consciousness field, then once you do that in a sexual interaction, there's like a stereo effect that comes in. There is a much wider effect that comes in, and that has been understood in Taoism and in Tantra. So Wilhelm Reich was describing that. He indicated that if the male got out of this Roman stigmatic view cartoon that the male needs to dominate and procreate and all that, and instead it goes back to the female is the carrier of life, and the female selects which man can reproduce through her or by her help, then it is the female that will be at the core of this symphony. And so when the male blends into her symphony, he can slow down, she can speed up, together they can open up this new realm of electromagnetic functioning in the body, which is a much deeper and much more fundamental level in the body. And then out of that comes, let's call it the unfolding of an envelope. It's like a flower opening up between them as a result of both of them being synchronized. And that is where their consciousness suddenly is no longer limited to their own consciousness, but they start to feel into each other. They start to connect up into the consciousness of the other. And that's where Taoism and Indian sexual texts are very clear on if you do sexuality right and the male follows in the pattern of the female, then this telepathy will come in, and there will be a very deep connection up to the soul level. They actually can feel their thoughts as if their own thoughts, but at a deeper level they can go beyond their own thoughts. And if you ask around, you can find that there are people, not many, who while they were having sex and while having orgasm or soon after, they had contact with the unborn, so that they actually could see the children or the child that was opting to be born with them before conception actually took place. So Wilhelm Reich realized that these kind of phenomena take place. The paranormal texts are very clear on the range of potentials that are involved on that. The mystical trainings worldwide, they all address this and how to do this in such a way that you overcome your limitations rather than get trapped into them. When Wilhelm Reich realized that this is actually where people then come into their own, let's call it divine consciousness, then he realized also that they would realize that they are actually creators in creation and that they are sovereign beings. That is the reason why the government tried to get rid of him and everything that he had discovered for all of humanity, which is that if you do sex properly, you will go to your deepest level of consciousness. You will discover that your consciousness only is significant, relevant, when you connect it to the consciousness of others. In sex, you can practice that with a partner, as some cultures show and worked out. You might have to discover between different partners what the compatibilities are and what the differences are. Just like a language is not spoken between just one person and another, but the language is always spoken in a group of people, in a society. So likewise, in a group of people, in a society, people can then discover this language of sex and discover between which people they can actually do that best. And out of that comes an understanding of different layers of sexual experience which are immediately connected to orgasm. Yes, there is this phase of latent or passive or denied or unknown sexuality as you see it with the child. Then there is the a passive hearsay level of sexuality of pre-adolescence, when it is clear that there is sexuality but actually the body is not computed for it as yet, and having sexuality at that time actually interferes with the body and mind and so on, spirit development. That's one of the reasons why many cultures are very clear on making sure that pre-puberty sex is not done. Then in puberty, it is from the body of the child going adult that the rhythm of the production of the sexual hormones will determine the transition from child to adolescent. And at that time, the exploration of sexuality is the logical next step to do. Actually, it's also the best time for procreation, because the sex cells are very powerful still, they're not aged. But before you can do the procreation, you actually need to understand about orgasm, about the telepathy, about the connecting up to the unborn. So you actually need to understand orgasm, and that's what this culture does not know. And with the repression of the findings of Wilhelm Reich, a lot of that got lost. But fortunately, his publications and his findings are still available, so people who look into that can then find that what he described, what Wilhelm Reich described in his books such as The Function of the Orgasm, extends much farther and actually connects up to what is described in Indian Tantrism and Chinese Taoism. And the Indian Tantrism, which has also an aspect where people use sex to basically control and manipulate themselves, while the Chinese Taoism is much more about how to go into the increase of health. the possibility for rejuvenation by getting rid of old trauma through orgasm explosions, so to say, and how out of that you can then get rid of more and more of the pent up old traumatic experiences, because simply you cannot hold on to locked in traumatic memories in the body if your body is flushed out again and again by waves of orgasm, which are very closely related to Kundalini events. So when the electrical system in the body starts to kick in, and when it becomes activated and more prevalent and more pervasively washed through the body, then it will wash out all of these traumatic events as well. So that's where you can then see that sex is an instrument for healing, but only if you realize that it has to do with this electromagnetic effect in the body, which of course means that you're actually dealing with the consciousness level of the body. And then you actually need to understand that we do need to get beyond this current pornography minded interpretation of sexuality into a consciousness minded interpretation or experience of sexuality. So those were the four levels of development and exploration of sexuality, which I then worked through a couple of years ago. To recapitulate them, the first thing I started to look at is, why is sex a problem? And I discovered that it was basically a political control schema, where other people will determine your life for you. In fact, it is a model of slavery. The second part of the development was to look into the solution that sex is when you look into the biology. And then in the biology, you see wonderful aspects and forms of development of how sexuality emerged out of single cellular organisms, microscopic, and how the shark, for example, was one of the gateways to the development of the penis. And in flowers, you can see how the sexual genitalia are overtly seen and operative. And in animals, you can see how there are so many variations to the theme, and all of them are there to help the species survive. And once you look more closely or more broadly at life on Earth, you see that all life forms are interconnected via the food chain, so that the development of one form of life actually interacts with the development of all forms of life, which is also why humanity needs to gear up and needs to stop killing life forms on Earth, because they are other parts of the consciousness of life on Earth, and also essential to our own life and being. So the third part of the story was then the realization that, okay, sex has been suppressed, but sex is prevalent everywhere in all forms of life. So how do we experience it in our body? And then we can see that in the onset of puberty, we go through a development where essentially we learn to stop being an individual and start being a human in the body of humanity. In many cultures, this development is thwarted by the denial of sexuality, and as a result, people are in conflict very often. There are all kinds of social and psychosocial and psychological disturbances which come out of this. The narcissist and the psychopath and other kind of disturbed interaction between people are all based on the lack of understanding of the relationship between people, the lack of respecting the uniqueness of others, and the lack of respect of freedom of choice as a basic flaw in that development. But once you look at how it is meant to be, then you can immediately see how simple and logical it is, and that the solution for going transcending your own limitations is actually built in the body, because if you go into sexuality and in an open mind explore it, first you would discover it for yourself by yourself, then you would talk about it with your peers, then you would compare the notes with say the other sex, and out of that would come exploration of an understanding of why the two sexes complement each other, and how out of that you can have a transcendence of consciousness, which is then the fourth part of the story, that what you will then discover for yourself actually has been discovered by many people and is described in all cultures of the world. So Wilhelm Reich did that for the West, Tantra does that for the East, Taoism does it for the Far East, and the shamanic approaches are doing the same for the Far West. So worldwide we can see that this knowledge exists, but it does require that you get out of the limitation of the understanding that sex would be taboo. Sex is no more taboo than learning to play with matches, or that you are learning to replace a plug on a light switch. You need to understand more before you can do it. Yes, there are risks involved, for the simple reason that in the sexual interaction the psychology and the physiology are sort of so closely linked that if you short circuit on the one side, you will short circuit on the other side, and that might lead to problems which you cannot quickly resolve. So it's much better to, like on the motorways, have an on-ramp so that you can learn how to get into that much faster, much more powerful transport system of in our bodies for consciousness, and off-ramp so that you know when you work with the sexual activities that you also need to give time for it to unfold and to unwind. So that would be that the series of stories. In broad lines, the understanding of each of them is already expressed in this introduction. As a result of that, it is also possible to see how they all connect up, which of course helps to see that when we talk about the separate components of, say, the church, the biology, puberty, and consciousness, the four elements of the story, that they all need to be understood together, because all of them are part of the development of consciousness. But the only way that you can develop that consciousness is by starting to realize that sex is not a taboo. Sex is a very powerful force of nature. It's actually where the cells can produce life, and that actually means that you are operating at the level where the cells are doing the atomic physics of making and remaking molecules. But cells can only do that because they have non-local knowledge to work with. So I'll just round that off for now for this introduction. Thank you.